This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, as the rehabilitation of Saido Berahino continued last weekend. His hat-trick in Sheffield Wednesday's 6-0 demolition of Cambridge United was his first ever in the league and his first in any competition since he got 4 for West Brom in the FA Cup back in 2015. It's keeping the ball out of the net rather than putting it in it that our first guest has been doing so expertly recently, helping his team to the cusp of the Sky Bet League One playoffs.
Playing with confidence, playing with a confident back four, confident team. I'm loving my time at the club.
And we'll hear from an EFL managerial nomad whose latest stopping point is in Sky Bet League Two and the capital.
Feeling a really good place. I feel like I've got a bit of my mojo back going in at Leyton Orient, but also I do feel that I've got really good people working around me.
It's the official EFL podcast. In the Sky Bet Championship then, a shakier week than normal for leaders Fulham, who picked up just a draw from their two matches. They've currently got 77 points, so with 9 games to go, beating the 101 collected by Jean Tigana's legendary Fulham team of 21 years ago. It's starting to look like a tall order. They have, though, already matched their goal tally of 90. It was great to see Bradley Dack back in action for Blackburn Rovers after recovering from his second cruciate knee injury sustained just 3 months after returning from his first. Out for exactly a year, his first appearance of the season, though, didn't go exactly to plan when he missed a penalty in the home defeat to Bristol City. Meanwhile, Barnsley's resurgence continues. Having won just 2 of their first 29 games, they have now picked up 4 wins in 8. They are just 2 points behind Reading, who are currently 20th, and the two play each other on the 2nd of April. Your fixtures this coming weekend, early kickoffs on Saturday, Derby at home to Coventry, and Sheffield United entertain Barnsley in that South Yorkshire derby. Huddersfield v Bournemouth looks like, to me, your game of the day. Luton head to Hull. Reading entertain Blackburn. It's Fulham against Forest in an evening kickoff on Saturday. And on Sunday, it's QPR against Peterborough. Into Sky Bet League One, where 9 wins in his 15 league games in charge and only 2 defeats have taken Kieran McKenna and Ipswich Town to within 6 points of the playoffs, aided and abetted by a club record 8 clean sheets in his last 9 games for goalkeeper Christian Walton. And here's the thing I have always wanted to ask a goalkeeper, Christian. I'm going to give you 2 choices. You can come off the field having won 5-4, the whole stadium is excited. In the dressing room, the manager's going absolutely crazy. The boys are all slapping their hands. It's the most exciting thing you could possibly imagine. Or I can offer you a 1-0 win, grind it out, miserable, but you haven't conceded. Which one are you going to choose?
I think I'm going to go option 2, the 1-0 win, grinded it out. I think that's a. I think most goalies would say the same, to be fair.
Seriously, even the excitement of a like end-to-end, you know, 1-0 up, back to 1-1, etc., just wouldn't excite you.
Maybe if it was there was something on the line, you know, like a playoff final or but in the season, if it was a Tuesday night game where you need to win, I think a 1-0 victory would be would make me happier than a 5-4. End-to-end, letting goals in. So I think it would depend on what was riding on the game, to be fair. I think if it was a playoff final, hopefully I could take not having a clean sheet.
Yeah, well, that would be an extreme version of not having a clean sheet. Actually, have you ever had any moments like that across the course of your career when the guys have all been celebrating a half-decent win and you've been sitting in the corner miserable because you should have got down quicker on your near post or, you know, you've been out of position?
Yeah, I have, because I feel like sometimes when I've made a mistake, the game has ended up being like that or something I've not been happy about, where the team have had to go up the other end and get us out of a bit of trouble. I think that was... I've probably had a few of them in my time, but no, everyone's going to be delighted if you do have a big scoring game, especially if you're a spectator or a neutral. Those games are always more exciting to watch.
Yeah, it kind of begs the question, Does a goalkeeper feel part of the 11, or is there always that little bit of slight distance? Because let's be honest, you spend a big part of your preparation, your week training, kind of away from the 10 outfield players.
In certain aspects, I feel like you would feel a little bit disconnected from the team at times, but I think that's just down to, like you say, the training through the week. We are in our own little group and then integrate throughout the session. But every team I've been at, I've always felt a big part of the team and always felt part of it. So I feel like in some aspects you might feel disconnected, but overall, always feel part of the team and part of the 11.
Yeah, even though at times there could be a coach, manager jumping up and down going, you need to tighten up, you need to close down quicker, you need to press harder and all that stuff. Is a little bit of you in your zone in the changing room at that moment thinking, well, actually, this doesn't apply to me. What I need to do is watch me positioning, make sure I'm switched on at all times, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's where a goalie coach comes in, and that's where their role is vitally important, because sometimes the manager might be not really worrying about what the goalie's doing. It might be, like you say, pressing higher up the pitch, whatever it might be. But then that's when the goalie coach will come in and step in and talk to me at halftime, before the game, after the game, about individually what I need to do to help the team and support the team to get the win, or whether it's defending a set play, whatever it might be. Just those fine details, that will always come from the goalie coach really more than the manager. And then the manager's just the collective and the style of play and knowing the style of play that he wants from the goalie.
I mean, it's René Gilmartin that you've got your goalkeeping coach relationship with now. I just wonder how long that relationship takes to build up, because obviously you've had your loan spells over the years. You must drop into an environment, have to get to know a new goalkeeping coach. How long is it before you kind of feel that synergy, or is it instinctive? Do you feel it straight away, Christian?
I've been lucky enough to work with some really good goalie coaches throughout my career so far, on loan at Brighton. So I've been very lucky, worked with some top goalie coaches that have helped me and improved me massive amounts. So I've come to Ipswich and worked with John Keeley for the first part of the season, and then René Gilmartin's come in since the new year, and it's been really good. And it's a relationship that goes back a little way, to be fair, because he was the number one goalie at Plymouth Argyle when I was a first year scholar. So I knew him previously, and then obviously seen him on the road a few times when I've played against Colchester, where he was, Bristol City. I knew him fairly well, because I actually cleaned his boots as a scholar at Plymouth. So yeah, that was the standing joke when he came in.
Yeah, that there's something in there, isn't there? Just be careful how you treat people, because you never know when that relationship's going to come around in football. But, I mean, in that first few weeks, are they kind of watching you, seeing what your tolerances are, seeing what you're good at, bad at, and working on a plan? I'm kind of asking the same question again, because I'm not sure you answered it.
They are always watching the first few weeks. I think if you know the game, you know the league. I've played a lot of games now. They would have probably had references from other coaches on me, whether it's good, bad, whatever it might be. And then I think it is down to your own personal opinion, and I think you can gauge that from working with someone within a few weeks. Some goalies are different, loud, quiet. Everyone's different within the game. So I would say over a period of time, you build up a relationship, but personal opinion, I would imagine, comes from a couple of weeks, really.
Yeah. What always shocks me as well is the kind of brutality of the feedback in football that probably people in everyday life wouldn't be able to take. Do you like to be told straight between the eyes where you're going wrong, or do they have to pussyfoot around you a wee bit and break it to you gently?
No, I like to be told. I think that's the best way. It's the best way to learn for me, is being told what I need to improve on, what I need to do better. From a debrief in a game, being told that wasn't good enough, I think you can do this better. But I feel that's how I learn. And I think that's got to be mixed with praise at the same time, and have a good balance. And like I've just mentioned earlier, I've had goalie coaches that have been really good with me and have always given me that sort of feedback. And I feel that's helped me improve as a person and as a goalie.
Was Kieran McKenna coming in, was being tight at the back, attacking that end of the pitch, making sure you let very little get past you, was that a central part of the ethos that he sold to you in the first couple of team meetings?
Yeah, definitely. I think his all-round coaching from sessions throughout the week, his schedule, his build-up to games, our match prep on the day of a game. I think the whole package, you could see it was top level and that he's worked at that top level. So obviously taking stuff from his time at Tottenham, Man United, like he showed that within a week at the club. So I think that was clear to see from everyone, not just playing staff, non-playing staff. So that was the first thing that really stood out to me. And then training and tactics-wise, I think that's come over the games that he's been here. To start with, yes, we needed to tighten up at the back. I think I'd only kept two clean sheets before he came in, and we had a bit of a mixed back four and there wasn't much consistency with it, which could have been down to injuries as well. But no, since he's been in, his tactics and the way we set up for games is really good, and the attention to detail with defending has been first class. So I think the results are showing on the pitch.
Was the change bittersweet for you? Because obviously your new manager has stretched you in certain ways, improved your game, but obviously your relationship with the previous one went back, not just the first part of the season, but obviously back a couple of seasons when you had that glorious promotion campaign with Wigan.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been a really big part of my career. Took me on a great loan at Wigan where we did have success and won promotion, got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, won an outstanding game in the FA Cup against Man City. So there were so many good memories, and that was what brought me back to Ipswich to work with him again, because I knew how good he was with me as a person and as a player. And it's just unfortunate that it didn't work out here as he would have liked and as a lot of people would have liked. But no, I've got nothing but good things to say about him, and was always really positive and always had good things to say about him, and really had a really good working relationship with him.
Yeah, hence me asking the question. We're talking, of course, I don't think I mentioned his name, of Paul Cook, that anybody hasn't worked it out. It strikes me as well, if we're contrasting the personalities, there might be a big generational gap between somebody that is 55, has played the game at quite a reasonable level, had a sort of major professional career, vs somebody that's 35 and has earned their stripes coming through those academies at Spurs and Man U before getting the assistants role at United. Very, very contrasting personalities and backgrounds for you to assimilate.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been lucky enough to experience different managers along my way. Paul Cook, yeah, experienced manager, played a lot of football at a high level, managed a lot of games in the Football League. So his experience was there for everyone to see. I think Kieran coming in here, it's a breath of fresh air with the sessions, bright ideas, worked at the top level, worked with the best players in the world. So the experience that he's got is obviously different to the experience that Paul Cook had. So obviously two different managers, but Paul Cook had great staff when I was at Wigan with him, and Anthony Barry, who a lot of people talk highly about. Obviously, I've been there with him, and he's a top coach. So Paul Cook obviously had him alongside. So the young coach working with an experienced manager, that was a good balance. And then obviously Kieran's come, younger manager with a more senior assistant. So the balance is similar, but just on the other foot, if you know what I mean. So really good, and both great managers that I've worked for.
Yeah. Was it quite daunting then when he sort of quits United and comes in? Are you really sort of feeling it, thinking, blimey, what's he going to be like? He's obviously left the club he supported as a kid to come and take over here.
Yeah, definitely. I think I didn't know too much about him before he came. You obviously see the favourites that are coming in for the job, and I don't think he was one for a while, so no one really had mentioned his name. And then his first day at the club, I had COVID, so I was actually out for 10 days, so didn't work with him to start with. So you're thinking, I'm coming in late. But no, it was brilliant. Went straight back in the team after a good first result for him, and obviously had good results since. So no, having a manager like that with the wealth of experience that he's got and worked at two massive football clubs, I think everyone was really, really excited with the appointment, and the players were really looking forward to working with him, and have loved every minute of his time so far. So long may that continue.
Listen, you made your move permanent in January. Was that a big step for you? Was that a lot of agonising over that decision, leaving Brighton after the 9 years you'd spent there?
Yeah, it was a massive, massive decision that I had to make. I had 6 months left there. I had some really good times there, and it's a football club that I've loved being part of, and I've been part of their success, really, and their journey. And my decision to come here was similar. I wanted to be part of a journey here, and I feel that that's the way the club's moving. I think with the way they're investing at the club and the infrastructure around the place, I think it's quite similar to, I got a similar vibe to being at Brighton when we were without a training ground, and then we got the new training ground at Brighton, and stadium was Premier League status. So yeah, I feel it's like a similar sort of build really at the minute, and I wanted to be part of the journey here at Ipswich and obviously have success here, and it's obviously such a big club for the league. So no, it was a tough decision at the time, but once I made it, I knew it was right, and I sort of just went with my gut feeling. And I almost had experience of 6 months here, so I had an insight into what the club was all about. So I think that helped as well. I wasn't coming here blind with not knowing much about the club. I knew everything about the place, the club. So yeah, decision was difficult, but one I've not looked back on, and I'm really enjoying my time here.
I was intrigued about the part that a club's history plays with the current generation of players, because obviously you walk around that magnificent stadium, there's the statue of Sir Alf and the success with Ipswich before he went off to win the World Cup long, 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 long before you were born, mate. And then obviously Sir Bobby as well. And I'm sure you've seen the footage of 78 winning the FA yeah. Cup and 81 winning the UEFA Cup. Do you have a sense of awareness of that? Does it kind of coat around you all, or do you feel very separate to those times?
No, I think those times play a big part in the club. I think yesterday at the training ground, there was ex-players there from successful periods of time.
Come on, name some of them. Come on, share them. Who was there? This is testing you, isn't it?
James Scowcroft, Mick Mills and Simon Milton.
Conversely, can it be a pressure? Because there will be some people sitting in the stands at Portman Road who remember glory days gone past, and you're at a lower level clearly than those times were. So does that yeah. create a heightened sense of expectation?
Yeah, in some aspects, I think. Yeah, I think they will obviously want the club back where it was though in those times. But we are where we are, and I think fans obviously understand that. And I think like there is a younger generation of fans coming into the stadium now who obviously aren't aware as much of those times. So I've had similar experience at Blackburn. There was a few fans there that obviously wanted the club back in the Premier League, winning the Premier League. Like there was history there and pressure there. So I don't see it as a pressure personally. Ultimately, we're here to do a job and produce those times again. So get the club back to where it belongs. And with the size and the stature of the club, I feel we can do that.
Yeah, you say size and stature, but then I'm looking at the top half of the Sky Bet League One table, and I guess Sunderland's supporters are going to be saying that, so are Chef Wed's, so are Portsmouth's, so are Bolton's, and there's only three prizes at the end of the season. And actually, four out of those five, including yourselves, are currently not in the playoff places. So it's a heck of a division to try and get out of, Christian, is it not?
Yeah, it's really difficult, and I think it's a lot harder than when I won it with Wigan. I feel the teams in it now are some massive clubs, like you say. I don't think it's quite as tight as the Championship playoffs at the minute, but yeah, it's a really good league, and there's some massive teams and some great away days for us, big stadiums, and I feel teams feel that when they come to Portman Road. So no, it is a difficult league to get out of, and we're fully prepared for that, and we know how difficult it is.
So to that end, is the gaffer playing the P word? Is he openly talking about promotion, pushing you as hard as he can to see if you can make it into those playoff places? Or is it a bit more of a softly approach? Because you'll also be aware, different managers have different approaches to that. Some will go, let's just try and win the next one and see where we go. Others put it on the wall and say, this is the target, yeah. Guys. You've got to try and get there.
No, he's complete opposite to putting it like promotion about, throwing that word about. I think he's mentioned the playoffs, and that was all our aim from Christmas, really. We knew that the automatics weren't a realistic target. But if we can get into the playoffs, that would be our first step. And then once you're in the playoffs, then I think promotion obviously seems a closer thing. And I feel at the minute we're not that far outside the playoffs. So I think for every individual player, yes, we want to look at the playoffs and getting into there. But I think each game, and I know it's a cliche, take each game as it comes, but it is true at this moment in the season. We can't look too far ahead. We're looking at last night's results. It's not going to affect us. I think if we win our games and we're still to play a lot of teams in the playoffs, I think if we win those games, we'll be there and thereabouts. So I think from the manager's point of view, I feel he would be thinking the same.
Christian, it's been a great chat. I want to finish by taking you back to where we started. I mean, that sense of satisfaction to have done your job so well over the past, well, I mentioned those 9 games, and just conceding that was one goal, wasn't it? I'm sure you've got it etched in your mind. I'm sure you've replayed it 100 times. Yeah. Even though you've kept a clean sheet for the other 8 matches, I bet that still tortures you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, because I feel like if I didn't let that in, it would be an even better record.
But my question was just the sense of satisfaction. You've worked hard to get to this point in your career. You've taken a big step in leaving Brighton after all this time. You clearly feel you're part of something, but the feel-good factor personally right now must be as high as at any point in your career, is it not?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, playing with confidence, playing with a confident back four, confident team. It's a really... really good part of my career, and I'm loving my time at the club and can't talk highly enough of it, and just really enjoying my football. And if you're enjoying your football, I feel like you'll play well and you'll enjoy everything really that's to come with being a professional footballer.
Yeah, the only problem is, of course, by doing your job well, you spoil it for all the rest of us. But I will wish you good luck, even though you're kicking me off the rails and every other neutral supporter that wants to see that 5-4. Great to talk to you, Christian. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Cheers, thank you.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Into Skybet League 2. And I think it's fair to say that the past couple of years have been eventful for Richie Wellens. It's 2 years to the week since all football was suspended due to COVID. His Swindon Town team were then crowned champions of the curtailed League 2 season. By November 2020, he dropped back down a division to take over at Salford City, where he spent 6 months and won the rearranged 2019-20 Papa John's Trophy final. He then started this season with another one of his former clubs as a player, Doncaster Rovers, in Skybet League One, where he spent 199 days. And then last week, he was back in business in Skybet League Two, inheriting a Leighton Orient team 4 points off the relegation places. He has drawn his first 2 games in charge, including at Leaders Forest Green Rovers. And I don't know whether this was some sort of fancy metaphor or this was true. Is it true you had a nosebleed in the second half of that game, Rich?
I did. It was literally straight after we scored. So I don't know if that had an effect on me or it was... No, I think one of the members' staff accidentally swung an elbow at me. So, for the last 20 minutes of the game, I had a nosebleed. But it's fine now.
I mean, complete and total full flow spilling out of you. You trying to direct tactics and stuff, and at the same time, you've got blood dripping out of your nose.
Yeah, no, complete and utter, yeah, full on. So I had to put one of the old bud things up, and got a little bit of stick from the Forest Green fans, which was gave them a bit of a laugh anyway.
Yeah, I've always wondered about managers in the technical area, or players to that matter, and general bodily functions, whether you A, feel the cold, or sometimes bust in for a wee, or worse and stuff like that, because I always imagine you're so ingrained in the moment there that nothing else matters to you.
Yeah, I have to say, before the game, you do feel the cold, but then when the game kicks off, you just don't really feel it, you don't take any notice of it. And as soon as the game's over, then the cold kicks in again, especially as you get older. the drinking too much water is a problem, especially at a stadium like Forest Green, where the changing rooms are a good 60, 70 yards in a far corner, so you can't be nipping across the pitch for the toilet. So some games you do have to hold it in.
Yeah. Do you know, I'll tell you something. I mean, I work on the BBC's results programme Final Score, and I have to tell you, when we've all been on air at 2.30 and we finally come off at 5.30, there is a stampede for the toilet. As soon as the camera's cut and the end credits roll, there's just a fight to get to the loo first. You've got to control that stuff. Richie, you heard your rap sheet over the last couple of years. Do you need a question from me?
No, I mean, it's been a difficult one. I think COVID probably affected me as a manager, especially Swindon as a club, more than anybody, because, you know, Swindon was owned by one person only. And Lee Power was, obviously, it affected his business and how he makes his money. And then, obviously, with no crowd, we planned on the last five home games being full, which we'd sold all the tickets for. And for that to be took away from us, Lee done great keeping the club afloat through COVID. But obviously now the club has changed hands. And that had an effect on, I think, everybody. The opportunity to come home under lockdown was there for me. Again, in hindsight, listen, if COVID would never happened, then I would never have gone to Salford. But, you know, you live and learn by your mistakes. It was a mistake to go there. I probably went there for the wrong reasons. You know, I hope the club do well, because it has the potential to do well. It just didn't fit right for me, to be honest. And I made mistakes. I could have, you know, I'm working under Gary Neville, who's one of the most famous names in the game. He's on TV all the time. And I could have probably handled it better and probably, you know, had more communication skills with him and understanding and working relationship with him. So I've definitely learned from that.
Yeah, and the Donny one as well, because I guess it fascinates me that you obviously have relationships. You would know Chris Casper, I'm guessing, going back to your starting off at United days and the owners there. And then similarly with Donny, obviously your two spells as a player. Does it change how you feel about the clubs? And obviously you had a couple of months at Salford as a player, didn't you? Does it change how you feel about the clubs?
Yeah, I mean, when I played for Salford, my legs were gone. I was an old man. I couldn't move anymore. Every single time I got a knock, I was out for 6 weeks.
I don't believe that, Richie. You've always shuffled along and got where you needed to be.
No, Clem, you don't have to believe it, but it's true. my legs were gone, and I was 37. I was doing my coaching badges on the side, and it got me out a couple of nights a week to go and train with the boys. Donny's different, you know. They had me for probably two of my peak years, when probably the greatest ever achievement was beating Leeds at Wembley, and then they had a couple of good years in the Championship. And that pulled on my heartstrings. I knew going into the job, I'd had the conversations about the available budget and where he was as a club. It was tough. And my agent was like, don't take it, you know, don't go near it. But I pulled up my heartstrings a little bit and I went in, you know. And if you look at it now, obviously it's not been successful since I've left. And then you look at it before, I do think that Darren Moore was clever and he's seen the warning signs. And I think in Darren's last five games, he lost five, and then obviously went to Sheffield Wednesday. Done a fantastic job at Doncaster on the whole, but I think he started to see the signs of what was to come. And then Andy Butler went in. Obviously, it was tough for Andy. And the majority of the squad, the best players, was Ben Whiteman, who he sold in January. And then the loan players, I think they had seven loan players who were the best players. So to lose that and then only have a fraction of a budget to try and replace, you know, we needed 14 players in the summer. And the budget to get them 14 players was nowhere near competitive enough in League One.
I mean, I always think, because of the pivotal role you played on the field, I always think of you as being very enthusiastic and energetic. But how much has your own personal resilience been tested? And were there some, well, there certainly be some sad moments over the last couple of years? Were there some pretty, I won't say uber dark moments, but moments when you needed to sit and stare at the space and think, oh, blimey, there's a lot going on here?
Not as much as at Salford, because, you know, the record at Salford was the same as Graeme Alexander. Graeme Alexander was given a huge budget in League Two at Salford, and my record was on a par with him, with his players. You know, we had that euphoria of beating Portsmouth at Wembley. I know it was a year before, but to still beat Portsmouth, who was probably 25, 30 places above us in the pyramid, was still an achievement. And I thought I would be given time there to have two or three windows and to implement my style of football. onto the football club to see the bigger picture and a long-term plan. Whereas at Doncaster, that did affect you, because you knew going in every single game, you're a massive underdog, you know, and no matter how good a coach you are, you can try and keep your teams in games. But any coach, any manager is only good as his players. And, you know, we had some good players. That's not, you know, having a go at any of the players. We just had the balance of far too many younger players making the way in the game, putting them in the team at once. You know, you look at John Taylor for Jerry Okinabiri, John Bostock out for long periods, Ben Close out for long periods, Cameron John was never fit. Jordy Wheeler picked up a bad knee injury in pre-season. So we did have a lot of things go against us.
Richie, what have you learned about yourself over the past couple of years? How has it changed you? How has it developed you? And I suppose, what are the benefits that you'll take forward into your current role?
Yeah, I also think a big, not a problem, because now I've come out of it the other side, I actually see it as a really big benefit. I was doing my pro licence during these last 18 months. And when you're going to jobs, and by the way, whenever I've gone into a job, the club has either been on the floor, and I in Oldham, a Swindon, a Doncaster, you know, that you're taking over these clubs that have been in wretched. I took over Doncaster, we won 3-24. So you're always going in a situation where, right, you're going to have to really turn this around and get your teeth stuck into it and find a plan and a way to steer it in the right direction. And in terms of Salford and Doncaster, I was going through my pro licence. So maybe I was trying to take too many things from a pro licence and put them into different parts of the club, trying to maybe overthinking things. So I was getting all this information overload from different areas. Whereas at Swindon, I just let it flow. And it was about the way that I felt. You know, I had a good camaraderie with all the staff and the people at Swindon and a good relationship with every single one of the players. And I honestly feel now, I feel in a really good place. I feel like I've got a bit of my mojo back, going in at Leighton Orient. And again, I just feel the big weight off my shoulders and relaxing, enjoying being on the coaching field. But also I do feel that I've got really good people working around me.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it says something about your reputation, maybe your communication skills in interview, doesn't it? That quite clearly a lot of people have been very attracted to the skills that had your number one managerial success, I winning the title with Swindon a couple of years ago.
No, I mean, so people always talk about that, but in my first 17 games at Oldham, you know, I took over a team that season that had played 11 games, that had won one, drawn one, and lost nine. And then in my next 17 games, it was only Wigan and Blackburn who got promoted that season that got more points.
So do you think Leighton Orient have come to you as that firefighter, or as the man that created the Swindon team that got promoted, or a bit of both?
I honestly believe my budget at Leighton Orient is a lot more than it is at Doncaster, that for a start. So I don't think that it's putting out fires. I think work for an ambitious chairman who seen the club go in one direction this year, and it's not quite worked. But Kenny started off fantastically well. For some reason, something's not happened. But I do think that the hierarchy at Leighton Orient want to take the club forward and want to do well for the club. So the only thing I've seen at the minute is positive signs.
Are there definite, distinctly North v South characteristics of a football club? I mean, I'm trying to think of your playing career. What was the furthest South you went in your playing career? Would it be Leicester?
Yeah, Ipswich for a little bit. But Ipswich is more East. It's quicker to go to Holland than it is to Ipswich.
And then similarly, I suppose Swindon be a tiny bit lower, wouldn't it, down the country, thinking about it from where Ipswich is, tiny bit lower. I guess what I'm saying is, be a bit different for you to be managing in the pure South, won't it?
Yeah, but in terms of me having a lot of time on my own, it allows me to just concentrate on a job, which is actually a real benefit. You know,
careful, mate, because you're at home now. I can hear the kids and the missus jibber-jabbing. Yeah, so don't say this too loud.
Yeah, no, I get that. But I honestly do miss them. But it does allow you to obviously just concentrate on the job. The biggest thing I've found is, you know, I'm living about 5 miles from a training ground. It took me an hour and 25 minutes on the first day. I mean, it is just unbelievable down there. It's just around the corner. It's about 2 miles away. Yeah, how long will that take? Yeah, a couple of hours. So it's different. Whereas up north, you tend to, you know, if it's 10 mile away, it's 20 minutes maximum. If you put your foot down, you can do it in 10. But yeah, the traffic down there is a little bit different.
Yeah. And the characteristics, do you think, of the players too? Have they got a slightly different vibe about them? I know it's an unfair question because you've only been in a week, but have you found that perhaps?
No, I mean, obviously the accent's different, but they all understand me, which helps. I just think from what I've seen so far, the lads have really bought into what we're trying to do, and they've been fantastic. Their attitude, you know, going 1-0 down last night against the league leaders was a real test of the character, and they come back. And not only did we draw the game, we probably should have won it. So it wasn't like we've got a point away to the league leaders, and it was we're hanging on and we're putting bodies on the line, blocking shots. It was a really comfortable draw for us, one of which we probably should have won.
Yeah. Did you have time with your first couple of days to go around the players individually, or did you have to do your sort of key messaging en masse?
Mainly en masse, but I'm obviously aware of some of the players through either managing against them. In terms of Darren Prattley, I've actually played against him.
Wow. He must be very old, mate.
I don't know if that's saying how old I am or actually how old he is. So, yeah, we'll be careful on that one. No, I think... En masse, but just we'd sat deep in the previous two or three games, and I didn't want to do that. So we just worked out of possession, getting high up the pitch, getting pressure on the ball, and then four or five patterns when we get it, and trying to give them a little belief and confidence to have that freedom to play. And, you know, don't play with slumped shoulders, with like the weight of the world is on you. Play with a smile on your face. And I think we've done that in the first two games.
Yeah. That's absolutely essential, is it? It's just to go and say, this is a fresh start. Doesn't matter what's gone before. And to just look for those little signs of body language, etc.
Yeah, we at the moment, I'm trying to manage more of the players that are not starting, because obviously your new manager comes in. You can only pick 10 outfield players. They're obviously happy, think that the manager likes you. And then the other lads are going, does this manager know anything about me? Is he picking me because he's not seen me in the past, or he's seen me in the past and he doesn't like what he sees? That's not the case. The case is that you can only come in and pick 10 players. They've got the shirt. It's up to them to keep hold of it. But then it's up to me to manage the, you know, we've got a big squad at Leyton Orient. He's actually probably 17, 18 outfield players that are not getting a game at the moment. So I think sometimes you need to spend more one-on-one time with them just to put the mind at ease that, you know, you can only pick 11. Understand how difficult my job is, but as long as you train properly and your work ethic is good and you handle yourself around the training around the right way, then you will get your chance in the future.
Yeah. If you need to get any of them going, you could always take your dog with you back to training for the next day, couldn't you? And just set him or her on them on the pitch. That'd get those lads going.
Yeah, well, he sounds like he's a big dog, doesn't he, from where you're sitting. But if you see him, you ain't going to be scared of him, that's for sure.
And you're not telling me the ultimate midfield enforcer has got a little handbag chihuahua or something, are you?
Well, not a chihuahua. It's a mini dachshund. So, and it's nothing to do with me. You'll never see me walking around the streets in Manchester with a lead and a mini dachshund. It's my kid's dog.
Okay, I'll take your word for it, I'm sure. Are we confident we've got the right opportunity for the long haul here? You've obviously signed a 2.5-year contract, Richie.
No, the only thing you can do as a manager is trust your employees and what they tell you. So, you know, I've trusted people in the past and, you know, that trust was probably misled. But I honestly do believe that they want the best for the football club. I do think it's a club that can achieve more than where it's at the moment. You know, so the only thing that I can do is work to my maximum, get the best out of the players. And then obviously you hope that bond and that trust between yourself and the ownership and the chairman continues to develop.
And just to square the personal side of all this, you mentioned the advantage of staying away from the family is, I guess, you can do 16, 18-hour days, work as much as you like. Are you reasonably good at turning off? It's going to be a day off for you tomorrow. Are you reasonably good at leaving football behind, or is that, and so you can concentrate on the family, or is that impossible till early into the job?
Yeah, not really. I think when I was at Swindon, it was difficult to get out to games because obviously Swindon's quite isolated. If you go into London, it's an hour and a half drive. Whereas, for example, on Monday night, I went to watch Arsenal v Blackburn 23s at Boreham Wood. It's a 20-minute drive. I can get to actually, my knowledge of the 23s level in the North West and the Midlands is pretty good. My knowledge in terms of the M25, the London clubs, isn't so great. So I can actually develop that knowledge. In terms of my days off, you know, it's not really that. Tomorrow I'll be looking at the way that Rochdale plays. So you never really get time to switch off. It's something that I'm trying to get better at. You speak to the more experienced guys. You know, some of them, you know, you look at Steve Bruce and Neil Warne, it's unbelievable how they do it for so long. So they must have, you know, mechanisms that they turn to make it work for them when they do switch off. So it's something that I'm trying to develop because I think it is important that you take your mind away from it at times.
Yeah, but I got to pay you the compliment, mate. You've shown great resilience and pretty good bounce back ability yourself, haven't you, over the last few years?
I think you need it. I think you need it as a player. So you don't play for what, 16, for 21 years. You don't play for 21 years if you've not got thick skin. You don't play 21 years and play outstanding every single game. There's going to be times when it's tough. And it's the same as managing career. You look at any manager now, they would have gone through rough spots. No manager has it, you know. Jose Mourinho is one of the best managers ever lived. He's had a tough 3 or 4 years. You know, you see managers that are at the top level now. Look at Dean Smith, who's been at Villa and at Norwich. You know, he had a tough at Walsall, but he got through it, he dealt with it, he improved as a manager, and then he went to Brentford, and obviously then he's been fantastic. Same Chris Wilder, the same. You know, so you do have jobs at work and jobs that don't work. I do think that the working environment and the people that you work for create has a massive influence on how a manager operates.
It's great to talk to you, Richie. Yeah, what's the name of what do you say the dog is? A miniature dash hound?
Yeah, he's basically a sausage dog, yeah.
A sausage. What's his name?
He's called Ovi.
Ovi?
Ovi, yeah.
Do we know where that came from? Did the kids explain?
No idea. Left it to the kids.
Do you want single billing on your appearance on the official EFL podcast, or would you like Ovi to be given a credit as well?
That's entirely up to you, Clem.
I'll make me mind up. Great to talk to you, Richie.
Top man. Cheers, pal.
There goes Richie Wellens. And let's give him a credit, Ovi the dog, as well. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, Forest Green Rovers' draw with Richie's Leighton Orient means the leaders' winless run is now stretched to 7 games, and their gap to fourth, which once stood at 16 points, is down to 7. It really could not be any tighter at the top of this division, with Northampton Town in second, separated from resurgent Bristol Rovers in seventh by just 3 points. Those two actually play each other this coming weekend. And just to underline how competitive it is, 10 days ago, Mansfield Town were in the top three, 2 consecutive defeats later after their 14-match unbeaten run, and they are currently 10th. Your fixtures this coming weekend, Friday night, third place Newport County entertain Hartlepool United. And then on Saturday, there's a Cumbrian derby as Barrow entertain Carlisle United. Bradford, fresh from Mark Hughes' first 2 consecutive wins, they're at home to Port Vale. Sixth place Swindon head to Crawley. Richie's Leighton Orient are at home to Rochdale. Mansfield entertain Stevenage. Northampton, Bristol Rovers, I've already told you about. Exeter head to Oldham. Sutton are at home to Tranmere, who are currently fourth. And I must just remind you, Monday night it is Colchester against the leaders Forest Green Rovers. All the proceeds from that match, as Robbie Cowling, the Colchester United chairman, told us last week, will go to humanitarian relief in Ukraine. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Richie Wellens and to Christian Walton. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.